Okay, here we go. I want to cover a lot. I don't have so much time. I want to point something out about the story of the Egel Hazav, the golden calf story, that now that you've been learning Sota, you might see some familiarities. The story of the Egel Hazav, I'm going to read through it with you right now. Listen closely. This is in Shemot Lamed Bet. The story of the Egel Hazav, the sins. I cut out a bunch of the stuff not necessary for our purposes. I'm sure you already know kind of the most basic outline. But let's get some of the details here. You stop me when you see something that reminds you of what you've been learning in Gemara here. Okay, Yutat. And it was when Moshe's on the mountain, he's getting lucho, it's a great holy prophetic time, and he's told by God, go down the mountain because your people aren't doing so good. And so it says, when he got close to the encampment, Vayar et ha'egel, he saw the calf, umachalot, and he saw the dancing, Vayichar af Moshe, and Moshe got upset. Vayashlich miadav et haluchot, and he's carrying the luchot, he drops them, it falls from his hands. Vayishaber otam tachat ha'ar, and he destroys them, breaks them at the bottom of the mountain. That's Yutet. Chaf. So he takes the eagle. I always imagine it as a gigantic cow or a calf, you know, like life-size golden calf. But it might have been very small. We actually do have archaeology of much later of like actual figurines of golden calves. We actually do have those. Anyway, chaf. So Moshe takes the calf, asher asu, that they had made, and he burnt it in a fire, which presumably to me means that he melted it down. And he made it into dust. He shaved it down into dust. And then somehow he has water, so he puts it upon the water. He spreads it on the water. And he made Bnei Yisrael drink. What does that sound like to you?
Wait, how did
that's a sota, right?
Shave down the gold.
I don't know. You ground it up. They had really big wheels, and I don't know. It doesn't matter, right?
No, okay.
I don't know the way that gold works, but. But anyway, it's very interesting, the parallel, okay? I'm just pointing that out because, don't worry, we're going to see a Gemara that points that out as well. I am not the only one who makes that realization. It goes way, way back. Okay, let's keep going. There's another interesting fact that we're going to need to know. Yosef, we're going to need to know about this. In Chaf Hey, skipping a little bit. Vayar Moshe et ha'am ki paruahu. Moshe saw that the nation was wild. Which, by the way, you should know that in the psukim referring to the woman, Sota woman, it talks about how they take off her hair and she's made wild.
That's not the only thing that they do.
Right, there's lots of other things. Okay, fine. Anyway, Kiparo Aaron l'shem tzavikamem. Aaron made them look bad to their enemies. Okay, that's what Moshe is seemingly upset about. Chavav vayamod Moshe. So Moshe gets up. Bishar hamachna at the gate of the or at the entrance of the encampment. Vayomer, and he says, Mi la Hashem Eli, who is he who is for God, come to me. Vayasfu elav kol b'nei Levi, and all of Levi comes to him. Yeah, Levites, all right. And that's according to Chazal, and maybe Pshat and Sukkim, but it's not so clear. That is originally the Kohanim in the Beis Hamikdash. According to this understanding, we're supposed to be the Bechor of every tribe, meaning it didn't matter what tribe you were, as long as you were a Bechor, a firstborn, and then it got transferred to Levi because of this story. Okay? Chazayin, by Yomer Lahem. So he says to them, Komar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, so saith the Lord, the God of Israel, Simu Ish Chir Charbo. A man should put a sword in his hand, Al Yirecha Ivru, Vishuvu, Mishar Lashar. And he should go from entrance to entrance, B'machna, V'hirgu Ish Etechav Achiv. And you should kill a person should kill his brother, meaning his fellow tribal member. V'ish Et Re'eyo, and a man should kill his neighbor. V'ish Et Krovo, and even his relative. Which is kind of pretty tough to say. Okay? So saith God, this is so bad, kill everybody who is involved in this, presumably. I say involved in this, but Moshe doesn't make that distinction, but let's assume that distinction is there. Chavchat. V'yasu b'nei Levi k'dvar Moshe. They don't even blink. They go and kill everybody. V'yipol mina'am b'yom ahu k'shloshet alfei ish. And how many people died that day? 3,000, which indicates what percentage, let's say there's 2 million people. How many is 3,000 What percentage? Somebody. What? It's quite small. It's less than 1%. No? Someone, right? 1% of 2 million would be
20,000.
Good. Somebody with math, right? So it's much less than even 1%. It's a fraction of a fraction of 1%, right? That's very small. You don't get that feeling from when the actual story happens. It says the entire nation goes up against Aaron. So apparently those who died by the sword is actually very small. It could be that there are other people who died as well. We'll see in a second. Vayomer Moshe, Milu Yidchem Hayom LaHashem, Ki Ish Bivno V'Achiv La'Tit La'Alechem Hayom Bracha. And all the people who did this, they're going to have a blessing. Lamed Vayibim Macharat, and it was the next day. Vayomer Moshe El Am. And so Moshe says to the people, Atem Chatatem, Chatag Gedola. You did a really bad sin. V'Atal El HaLashem. Now I'm going to go up to God. Ulai Achapra Ba'ad Chatatchem. Maybe I'll get forgiveness for you. So meaning, everybody else was somehow implicated, and there is risk here. And in fact, what happens after this, I'm skipping a little bit, but what happens after this is that Moshe has to plead for the Jewish people because God wants to wipe them all out and start over with Moshe. And Moshe pleads for the case of the Jewish people and is successful. Lama Dalet. A little bit after that. So what God says to him is, Lech nechea et ha'am et el asher dibarti lach. Hine malachi elech lefanecha v'yam kadati alehem chatata. Don't worry, I have paid back. I will pay back what they have done in the sin. There will be a malach that will go out for them. We won't get into that. Lamed hey. And then, so seemingly God is like, don't worry, I won't wipe out all the people. I will just wipe out who deserves it. Lamed hey, vayigov Hashem et ha'am. God sent a plague against the nation. Al asher asu et ha'egel, asher asa Aaron. For having made the eagle that Aaron had made. Right? So Aaron, by the way, does not get off scot-free here. It is interesting. He doesn't seem to get punished for this, although I think it's according to the Ralbag that when he was involved in the Mei Meribah story where Moshe hits the rock, it's not clear who's what Aaron did wrong there. And all the Mefarshim try to come up with a different understanding. The Rambam is apparently not concerned for what Aaron did wrong there. So I think it's the Ralbag who says, really Aaron did wrong by this story, by the Egel Azav, but that was like the opportunity for God to now say, okay, it's because of this, you know, even though he wasn't quite involved. And the Ramban has an answer that actually works better. But we're gonna get there. Don't worry. That might be relevant. Okay, realize that there's at least two deaths that occur here. First of all, there's definitely a Sota connection. You cannot deny the Sota connection. There's at least two types of deaths. What are the two types of deaths that we see in the story?
By sword.
Sword and by plague. And then you have to question, well, what about the drinking of the water? What kind of death would that be?
Sota
death, whatever. The blowing, the magical blowing up of the person. So there's three deaths, presumably, here. It doesn't say. That's true. It doesn't say that. But we can assume that if they were guilty, they would have died. Or maybe their sins would have delayed for them, right? If you're in,
yeah,
if you're in Shear. Yes. So apparently the Egel was taking the place of that. Presumably the people who drank, it does say that the entire B'nai, sounds like the entire B'nai Yisrael drank the water. It only affected those who were guilty, but we don't know. It doesn't say who died. Presumably not everybody died, right? So when they drank the water, if it's like Sota, it would only actually affect those who were guilty. What? Yeah, right. What's the purpose of the three deaths? That's a good question. That's a great question. So I made the connection to you guys, and you guys realized the connection when I set it up that way, that the Moshe taking the Egel Azav, grinding it up and putting it in the water, is very reminiscent of the Sota. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah on Men Dalet Amun Aleph actually says this explicitly. Let's just see it inside. He spread it out on the water, sprinkled it on the water. Yashk et B'nai Yisrael. He made B'nai Yisrael drink. Okay, that was the pasuk. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, Lo nitkavein ela lebot kan kesotot. The only reason he did that was in order to check them like Sota, to see who was guilty. Now you would think that once he did that, you don't need to have any other deaths, meaning whoever was guilty, right? Unless there's a reason why there needed to be more deaths. Let's think about Sota for a second. Let's say She's not in the category. She does adultery, but her husband never warned her. Would the sota water work?
No.
No. What if there are witnesses to her doing adultery?
No.
With the sota water, and they just don't come forward. The sota water wouldn't work. Meaning, there are ways that a woman could be guilty, but she won't get punished for it because the sota. What? Or there could be merit, right? We're learning in the Gemara that it's possible that you can have merit through learning Torah, maybe, or doing mitzvot that will delay. That would delay the punishment. Maybe not indefinitely, but at least for some time. Okay? So now that's going to be relevant to the following Mishnah. Okay? Right? So again, there might be a good reason why there needs to be more than just the sota water checking the people. Because again, the sota is very technical. It has to fit in with it in certain paradigms. That's the way God set it up. So meaning you have to be a certain type of guilty in order for it to actually affect you. So that might explain the story of Rabbi Eliezer and women and his declaration that better the Torah be burnt than to be given to women. You haven't seen it yet. You're interested? It starts with a Mishnah in Sota. The Mishnah Sota, Mishnah Dal. It says like this. And this is the most important source when it comes to women learning Torah. If they're allowed to learn Torah, what kind of Torah they're allowed to learn. This is the main source. This is where it starts, basically. And it says like this. So if she has merit, if the woman who's drinking the water has merit, it will delay for her, meaning it won't punish her right away. There's some merit that will actually delay for 1 year. There's a merit that will delay for 2 years. Okay? There's merit that will delay for 3 years. It sounds like up to 3 years, and then she goes kaput. Okay. Mikan Omer Ben Azai. From here, Ben Azai says, Chayev Adam Lilamedet Bito Torah. A man is actually obligated to teach his daughter Torah. Right? Why? Shim Tishteh Tidash Azuchot Tolala. That if she drinks, she will know. We're going to read it as the Gemara would read it. She'll know because she drank. If she has Torah knowledge, she'll know that the reason why it's not being delayed for her is that she has Zuchot. Right? You could read it a different way. You can say that through learning Torah, she will it'll save her life, so to speak, and delay. Right? So, like, get out of the sota situation. But Rabbi Eliezer argues against that concept. If we read it that way, which is like getting out of being punished as a sota by learning Torah, Rabbi Eliezer goes straight up against that. He says, "Kol melamed et bito Torah, ki ilu melamda tiflut." Anyone who teaches his daughter Torah, it's as if, but probably you should take out the as if, it probably doesn't have that. He actually is teaching her tiflut, it sounds like, from the Mishnah. What is tiflut? Not sorcery, not usually translated that way. Maybe from there are suggestions that it comes from the word tafel, but that would be with a different spelling, so that's interesting. But it's usually the more common translations are either nonsense, it's teaching her nothing, like the Rambam translates it that way. You're teaching her dvarim havai, like just nonsense, because she won't understand it. Assumes the Rambam. That's not what he says. In his Hilchot Talmud Torah, he says that women aren't educated and therefore won't be able to really think out the details of what they're being taught. Implying, by the way, the fact that the Rambam inserts that into his Hilchot Talmud Torah implies that what? Were they educated, then it would be proper to teach them Torah.
Isn't that a self-fulfilling prophecy? Yeah.
Yes. Well, let's put, meaning, meaning the other, what? Yeah, the you could say it from like a different perspective, which is the fact that they're not educated in other areas of their life means that Torah knowledge would be have a negative effect. They wouldn't understand it. They would mock it even. Okay? That's one possible understanding of what Torah, of teaching her tiflut would mean. That's not what the Gemara says, interestingly enough. It sounds like. What the Gemara says, we'll see exactly what that means. Let's get into a story of Rabbi Eliezer.
Oh, hey, this is
Rabbi Eliezer and the sota. Let's go. Okay. So you'll understand why somebody asked me, what does the Egel HaZav have anything to do with this? You'll see. Okay? Here, the Gemara in Yoma on Samach Vav Amibet says like this. Shala Isha Chachama et Rabbi Eliezer. What does the Isha Chachama mean?
A wise woman.
She was educated. She was educated. According to the Rambam, like what I'm saying, if my interpretation is correct, the Rambam would say that you can teach your Torah, right? So, Isha Chachama, Shala Isha Chachama et Rabbi Eliezer. A wise woman asked Rabbi Eliezer the following question. If everyone did the same act at the Ega, they made an idol. If they all did the same thing, if Neima ain mitatan shaveh, then why are there three different types of punishment for them? Amarla, what was his response? Ein chachamal isha ela bepelech. The only wisdom there is for women, or women's only wisdom, is in the spindle. You're only good at sewing. V'cheinu omer, it actually says in the pasuk, v'chol isha chachmalei b'yadeh tavu. Any wise-hearted woman in the building of the Mishkan, it says, donated her time to sew like the curtains and all the things. Which is interesting, because that's an amazing praise of the women at the time. They used their arts and their capabilities to build the Mishkan, and he's using it as an insult. Like a mockery of this woman. The only wisdom you have is actually in sewing things. Go back to your house. It gets worse, guys. Let's hold off, because that's the Bavli version. Hold on. So, in the Bavli version, in this Yoma Samach Vav Amebet, we actually have a statement that goes after that answers the question. Meaning, he doesn't answer the question. Even if, you know, and this is weird that Rabbi Eliezer wasn't willing to answer this question, because what? It's Torah Shebichtav. What? It's first of all a good question. And second of all, it's Torah Shebichtav. This isn't complicated stuff. Presumably, we assume that women are allowed to read Torah Shebichtav. Even the Rambam says they can read Torah. They're allowed to read Torah Shebichtav if she wants an answer to this question. Yeah, so we'll see that in the Yerushalmi has that kind of version. But here, the Bavli just has a response after, which is Itmar. There's a tradition like that states like this. Guys, read with me. This is in source 4, right? Rav and Levi. It's a machlokas Rav and Levi. Chad amar zivech v'kiter. Let's say you actually sacrificed to this idol and actually did incense to this idol, Messiah. So you're actually killed by the sword, or by the B'nai Levi. Gafef v'nishek. If you embraced it and you kissed it, b'misa, then you actually got death through the sota water. Through the misa that comes from the sota water. Samech bilvavel, if he's happy in his heart, meaning he was pretty happy that they made this idol, but he didn't do anything in particular, bahadrokan, then he got some kind of disease. He got some kind of plague. Okay? So one of them came up with a way that there are three different actions here. One is where you really did avodah zarah. One is where you kind of, not actually, but kind of did avodah zarah. And the other one is where you were just kind of happy with the situation. And they all had death penalty as a result. Okay. The other one says, no, it's a little bit different. And kind of like what we were saying when it comes to the sota. Chad amar, edim vehatra. If there are actual witnesses, presumably, I would think there would be all witnesses for all of this stuff.
Sorry, wouldn't that automatically block all the sota water?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Wait, hold on a second. Exactly. Edim vehatra, let's say there was witnesses and there was warning, besayef, then they got killed by the sword. Edim below hatra, let's say there were witnesses, but there was no warning, then bimisa, then it's the sota water, because there are witnesses, but there's no warning. Lo edim below hatra, if there's no witnesses, there's no warning whatsoever, behadrokan, so that happened with the plague. That's how he breaks it up, right? The sota water is either because they embraced it and kissed it, or the sota water is because there are edim without warning, which doesn't quite parallel the sota case, but it's close. Okay, so that's how they broke it up. We're going to see a parallel Gemara in Yerushalmi. Guys, you see how sota, the sota concept, is making its appearance here as part of like what Rabbi Eliezer did not want to tell this woman. Okay, so maybe we'll come up with an answer why she might have been asking this question in the first place. All right? Sota Yerushalmi, again, Perek Gimel, Halacha Dalid, Matrona, it was a certain Roman noble, presumably a Jewish woman, but a matrona, not a isha chachama, but okay. Shalat Rebbe Lazer. Asked Rebbe Lazer the following, the same person, okay? Just Yerushalmi asked. Bimnema achat achat b'masa egel, v'hein meitin ba shlosh mitot. Why is it that they only sinned one type of sin when it came to the egel, but they died three different types of death? Amr La, so he said to her, In chachmata shel isha ela bepilcha. Same kind of answer, which is the only wisdom for a woman is in the spindle. Dichtev v'chol isha chachma lev biyadeh atavu. Okay, so he says, they approve it from the pasuk where they built the Mishkan, it was all the women chachme lev who helped sew things. Okay, so presumably she left the room, but it doesn't say that. And now there's a following conversation that Rabbi Eliezer has with his son. Amr La Horkanos b'na. Horkanos, the son of Rabbi Eliezer, says to him, right? Happens to be Rabbi Eliezer is Ben Horkanos. So he named his son after his father. Amar lo Horkanos b'no. His son Horkanos asked him, Bishvil shalo leyeshiva devar achad min haTorah. Because you were unwilling to answer her one thing from the Torah, ivadata mimeni shlosh mea kor maser b'chol shana. You have created a loss for me of 300 kor, which is a large amount of wheat or food, every year. Meaning she would donate to the Beit Midrash. She would donate to our business, our family, our learning, and you have basically sent her away. You have kicked, you know, she's never coming back. She's never going to donate to us ever again. So you couldn't answer this one thing? What does Rabbi Eliezer respond? Amar lei, yisrafu divrei Torah va'al yimseru l'nashim. Let the Torah be burnt, then be given over to women. That's his response to his son. Wow. That's strong language. And even though I told you what the shir title was, and you already knew this coming up, it's I see from your eyes that it's still a little bit of a shocking statement. Okay. So what does this mean? Right? We're going to attempt to answer this question. Okay, on two levels. First of all, why wasn't he willing to answer this woman? And second of all, why is he, let's say, he could have just responded to his son, it's usher, it's like teaching her tiflut. What is the meaning of the sentence, yisrafu, what does it say? Yisrafu divrei Torah, let the Torah be burnt, than to be given over to him. What does that mean? I want to try to prove, see if you agree with me, that Rabbi Eliezer had something very specific in mind. And maybe we're missing some details from the story that will make it make sense to us. Yeah.
Do we need to ascribe to the wife that he wanted you to do
that? Not necessarily, but I'll try to. First of all, our Rishonim were already concerned for this. Our Achronim are definitely concerned for this. For what does Rabbi Eliezer mean here? Presumably you're allowed to teach a woman Torah Shebichtav. This is a Torah Shebichtav question. There's no reason why Rabbi Eliezer should feel the need not to answer. And in fact, his son says, what was the reason why you refused that? Now we've lost so much money because you've stood. It doesn't sound like he's saying, because you've stood by halacha. Horkanos would never say to his father, why we lose so much money because you keep halacha. Presumably that is not the argument to his father. Oi, dad, you lost so much money by keeping Shabbos. That's not what he's arguing with his father. Presumably it's mutter. There was something else going on here that Horkanos, his son, felt that his father should have given in on. Some principle that his father was standing on that doesn't seem to just be misogyny, right? All right. Now, again, Yotam, I'm not against saying that there were rabbis in the time of the Gemara that did not have what we would call an egalitarian. However, in terms of the halakha, we paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. I don't want halakha to be based on misogyny. If we can attribute, first of all, if it's true, if what I'm about to try to prove to you is true, then he's not being misogynistic, he has something else in mind. Okay? On the second level, if we can attribute value to what the halakhic system has resulted in, that is not on a misogynistic level, which is not something that we agree with, then I would prefer that as well. Does that make sense, Yotam?
Correct.
Okay.
You have a very difficult task in front of you.
So what exactly is going on? I should mention, guys, that this is not a shiur on whether women can learn Torah, and if they can, And believe me, I believe that women can fully learn Torah nowadays, and in fact should learn Torah.
At a seminary,
and I'm teaching at Amudim, so for sure. Nowadays, there might be a different situation than in the time of the Gemara for a lot of different reasons. One of them, this is the main like modern Orthodox argument, is that if women are given an education that's on the level of PhDs, they have a PhD in chemistry, but you're expecting them to have the learning Torah on the level of a third grader, you know, who knows the alphabet and some Torah and some Parsha, then you're going to, it's no wonder that many women don't find the Torah or find their religion intellectually engaging, and that's not a good situation to be in. There's a lot of interpretations of what the Rambam's talking about. There's a lot of interpretations of what the Gemara's talking about. This is not a shear for the ins and outs of where that lies. And I think that we could be much more lenient today than we would be in the past, before even 100 years ago, when women generally didn't even go to universities and things like that. It's a very different situation nowadays. Okay, let's just finish off this Yerushalmi. We're still in the middle of the Yerushalmi. Ukishiyasta, when she left, so it sounds like she had not left when they had the conversation about the funding. She was still in the room. That's what it sounds like. Amrulo Tamida.
So that means that she heard him say...
better the Torah be burnt than to be given to women. Yes. Yes. Okay? So that's also another indication. I think it's not just some secret misogynistic whatever. Either open misogyny, or he was saying something else. He was saying something that she would have understood very powerfully. I want to get to the end of this year so I can give you the answers. Because if I stop now, there might be problems with your faith. Okay. She asked him when she left. Amrilo Tamida. His students asked him, Rebbe, Lizot Dechita, with this you pushed her away. Meaning, with this you got her out of the room. Lanu Ma'ata Ma'ishiv. With us, what are you going to say? What are you going to answer? This is meaning to say, the students said to their teacher, this is a good question. We want to know the answer. Rebbe Bracha, Rebbe Abba, Barkana, B'Shem, Rebbe Eliezer. So they said in the name of Rebbe Eliezer the following answer that he apparently answered his students. Kol mishehu lo edim v'atra hayamet bebeitin. Anyone who had edim v'atra, they died in beitin by the sword, right? The death penalty. If they had witnesses and warning. Edim v'lo atraya hayanivdak kesota. If they had witnesses but without warning, then they were checked like the sota. That's the people who drank. Lo edim v'lo atraya hayamet b'magefa. They would die by, if they didn't have edim or warning, they died by the plague. Same answer as one of the answers above. Then we have an interesting thing. Rav and Levi Barsisi have a different answer, have only one of the answers that we saw above in the Bavli. This is only one answer by both of them in the Yerushalmi. Zivech v'kiter nisech hayameis bebeistim. Tivech v'rikej sichek hayanivla kesota samech b'libo meis b'magefa. The different distinction, which was, which act did they do? Three different acts. The first answer, again, assumes that there's one act, but three different punishments depending on how many edim or how many warnings there were, or if there was a warning. And the second one assumes that there is three different acts. One is where they're actually offering stuff to the idol. That's where you get the death penalty. If you're just dancing and happy around the idol, dancing and being glad, then you got checked like the sota. And then if the person was just happy in their heart passively, that's what who died in the magefa, and who died in the plague, in the pandemic. All right? So what's interesting is that Rebbe Eliezer's position is one of them, which is that if a person had edim but no warning, there was a way out of this, of not dying, it sounds like, which is that they could get checked like, if they had edim without warning, they could get checked like the sota. If they had no edim, then they would die in the magefa. If they had edim and atra, they died by the sword. So the question is, let's say you figured out a way out of this. What she was asking might have been a way out of it, meaning, I want to know what categories. I think her question is this, right? You're paying attention? If you weren't paying attention before, pay attention to this. I think her question is this. They all drank the sota water, or the parallel to the sota water. Some people died by this way. Some people died by that way. I want to know why some people didn't die. And so she was asking, why are there three different types of deaths here, meaning there's two explicit deaths and something by the sota water. I want to know what that was so I can know to avoid it while I'm doing my bad things, whatever it is, adultery or avodah zarah. I want to get out of it. That's why she was asking, what were the three deaths here? Why did they die three deaths? If they all did the sota water, they should have died by that. Doesn't even do that. Doesn't even have that in the pasuk. What?
She had an ulterior motive.
She had an ulterior motive. She wasn't asking for Torah's sake. She was asking in order to get out of sin. She realized something from the Torah. She read into the story.
Isn't this happening in the times of my friends?
What do you mean? Yeah, the woman comes to Rabbi Eliezer.
She's asking the times of the
Lord. No. She wants to know what is considered sinful according to the Torah. Because if that doesn't happen to me, or I can avoid that, that is something that she was looking for. She is trying to knock at Rabbi Eliezer, and she wants to know what is something that apparently God doesn't strike you down for. What?
Isn't that like a positive if she's going to not be a sin?
No.
Like, hey, which
she wants the sin, but not be checked like a sota.
I think also, she was messing around with Romans, right?
She was messing around with Romans. She was, according to Yerushalmi, she was a matrona, so maybe that makes her more into society. I'm going to try to prove it to you. I'm going to try to prove it to you with three things, okay? Three things. First of all, I want it to fit into Rabbi Eliezer's personality that he would just kind of throw people out of the room if he didn't want to answer them. That's one thing. Number two, I want to show that that's actually what Rabbi Eliezer's exact concern was for Tiflut, that he was actually concerned for that exact problem, that there would be women who would try to use the Torah to get out of being punished for their sins. And number three, I want to try to prove that that's exactly what Yisrafu HaTorah, let the Torah be burnt, means according to Rabbi Eliezer. Okay? Let's see if we can get there.
Why are we concerned about men?
We'll get there, kind of. But yes, that's a good question on its own. Maybe we'll try to answer that. Right here, I'll just say that it's true that men could also be doing this. It happens to be when it comes to, let's say, sexual crimes, women are have many more problems than men do in terms of sexual crimes because of adultery. Adultery is much more common, presumably. A riot, it's very easy. It's very easy for a woman to violate if she's married, but it's not so easy for a man to violate because he would have to actually seek out a married woman instead of just finding any single woman who would be willing to sleep with him. So that might be one aspect of it, which is that in terms of sexual impropriety, it could be that he was concerned about women scheming their way out of it. And number two, it could be that because men are a just chayiv to learn Torah, it's true that there will be some people who will scheme, but women aren't chayiv to learn Torah, so why should we do the flip side to the danger of learning, of getting more chachma? Let me try to prove it to you. First of all, that Rabbi Eliezer's personality was such that he was willing to just get people out of the room as quickly as possible if he didn't want to answer them. So first of all, I didn't put this on the sheet, but Rabbi Eliezer is well known for his statement that he would only ever say something that he learned from his Rebbe. We did this in Sukkah last year in Bikias. He would only answer people. He would refuse to answer people if he didn't have an answer that he had already learned. He would just be silent about them. That's a Gemara in Sukkah on Chaf Chet or so, something like that. Okay, but let's look at the Meiri on that Gemara in Yoma. He says like this: V'chein einli hedyoto to la'amei ha'aret lehitra'ot misheilotem lifnei ha'rabbanim ha'kedolim. It's inappropriate for idiots and amaratzim, meaning ignorant people, to ask their shilas to great rabbis, right? The tippy top. You don't go to the Nobel Prize winner in physics and ask them a basic question about physics. It's inappropriate. So Elishiyu Sholim Livnei Adam Acherim Gedolim Mem. They should ask, like, you know, their professor or a teacher or something like that, or go to a textbook, I guess. But they shouldn't go to the highest of the best of the best. V'dayam Bekach. They should be happy with that. That should be enough for them. Derech Tzachot.
But if they're ignorant, then how do they know not to do that?
What? If they're ignorant, yeah, it's like a catch-22. But an ignorant person should go to a level higher than them and not go to the highest level. You shouldn't be asking Dr. Fauci about how to get rid of the common cold, how to deal with the snuffles. He says, Deretz Achod Amru al Ishach HaChamash Sheela L'Rebbe Eliezer. So that's why they said a story about a wise woman. It's interesting that he even includes the Girsa, that it's a wise woman, even though he's calling her an Amarat and a Hed Yotot. I guess it could just mean a regular person. She asked Rebbe Eliezer that question, the Ka'asala, Ka'asala, and he got angry with her, the Amar, and he said, Ein Chachma Shel Isha Elul Pelach, Shemar Chol Isha, Chachma Lev, Yadet Tavu. He said that there's wisdom only in the spindle. What does that mean? Kilomar, says the Meiri. Umalal hatrichenu b'sheilot elu. Why is she bothering me with these questions? You know, meaning, don't ask me these questions. You shouldn't be asking the Gedolei Yisrael these questions. He got angry with her. Titasek b'pelcha. Go back to your spindle, isata, and go back to your dough that you're kneading. V'daya. V'teshuvat ha-sheila mia mitba'eret b'samuch. However, the answer to the question is explained later. So he according to the Meiri, this isn't a great defense of Rebbe Eliezer, but he wasn't misogynistic. According to the Meiri, it was just that he was elitist.
He wasn't misogynistic. He was just mean.
He got angry with commoners asking him questions. So Meiri says he just considered himself high above these kinds of questions, and for her to bother him was inappropriate. Okay, fine.
So he wasn't being...
It wasn't that bad.
He would have yelled at anyone.
Right, he would have yelled at, if it was man, woman, child, who would have come to him with that. Okay? And Rav Uziel, in Sheol Sejuva, says...
If a man came to him, he would have said, rather get the Torah be burned than give it.
Yeah, well, so the Meiri wasn't talking about the Yerushalmi. He's only referring within the Bavli. So I don't know how he would answer for the Yerushalmi. It's a good question.
Well, he said it was a stupid question, so...
Let's say there's 50% of men were Amaratzim. So those 50% of men at that time, if they would have come to Rebbe Eliezer, he would have screamed at them. And all 100% of women were Amaratzim at that time, let's say. Which might be true, meaning sociologically true, right? Educationally true. That could have been at that point in history that women were just not educated. So it could be that 100% of women who came to him, that he would have kicked them out. 50% of men, he would have kicked out as well. So when he says, let the Torah be burnt rather than be given over to women, it's because of the fact that 100% of women were not educated on Amaratzim, according to Meiri. I don't know. Maybe that's how he would have answered it. But anyway, in the we have others who say this, like, for example, this is fairly recent. Mishpatei Uziel, he has like this. V'chein mashikasav ein chachma l'isha ala b'pelach. And similarly, when it says that he declares that there's only wisdom for a woman in the spindle, inu ela melitza yafa. This is a nice saying. L'hishtamet milihashiv al she'elata. In order to prevent himself or to get her away from answering, to avoid answering her question.
This was a nice way.
By saying your wisdom is in the spindle, it was a nice way, says the Mishpatei Uziel, to get her out of the room because he didn't want to answer her question. But we have to admit that she was a wise woman. How do we know? Because it actually calls her a wise woman, right? That's actually how it introduces her. So we know it has nothing to do with the fact whether she was able to learn or not able to learn. It wasn't related to her status. It was just he didn't want to answer the question. Why he didn't want to answer the question? Like I was saying, maybe from the Gemara and from other places, we find that his personality is that he didn't want to answer questions he didn't know the answer to, perhaps. Or according to the Meiri, he didn't want to answer questions from like lowly people. But okay. So that's his personality. I think, all right, we at least have some sources that go towards that. Rebbe Eliezer's personality is that he would not answer questions and be kind of mean in order to get them out of the room. So Rebbe Eliezer, what does he mean by tiflut? So we mentioned already the Rambam. It's nonsense. But that's not what everybody says. This seems to be going against what the Gemara says, and there are some who try to see this as a contradiction. Other people answer it up. It's not a contradiction. Here's what the Gemara in Sota that you might have read if you're in Bikiyashtir, not in ours because we didn't get to it yet. I thought hopefully we would get to it today. We're actually on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, and this is Chaf Aleph Amud Bet in Sota. It says, Amar Rabbi Abahu. Rabbi Abahu says, My time to Rabbi Eliezer. What is the reason for Rabbi Eliezer who says that anyone who teaches his daughter Torah, it's as if he taught her Tiflut? Dichtiv, because it says in Mishlei, Ani Chachma Shechenati Arama. I am wisdom, my neighbor is clever, mischiefness, or I right the flip side to being wise is also being a person who's sly, who gets around things. Kevin shenichnas chachma ba'adam, when a person becomes wiser, nichnasa imo armumit. There is also a certain amount of slyness of being able to get out of things, cleverness that comes with it, negative cleverness that comes with it. That's the reason why women shouldn't learn Torah, because they also get tiflut, which according to this means, not nonsense, it doesn't mean sexual impropriety, it means that they're able to get around the stuff. If you teach a daughter Torah, she might figure out how to get around being a sota woman. That seems to be the concern.
We want her to become a sota woman.
We
want her to become a sota woman.
In some sense, meaning we don't want her to specifically do actions to avoid punishments, right? The Bart Nura on that Mishnah makes it even more explicit. He says Shemitocha Torah he mevina or mimut. Well, said to Varabetzneh, because her learning Torah, she'll know how to get around things, and she will do the things in private, make sure nobody sees.
Can't right? Apply to like anyone with like any mitzvah?
Very good. So, getting around if they know the mitzvah. Then, yeah, it's true. But this is particularly something which is like it could create mabzerus. It could be really bad problems. So I thought you were going to ask the question that we had before. Somebody asked about why does this not apply to men? According to the Marsha, it actually does apply to men. He says, Gabe Ish, when it comes to a man, he is concerned for this question though. The Marsha. He says, when it comes to a man, he auto elit lhavin. Because a man is often in business, he's out in the world, says the Marsha, he has to know how to deal with wicked people. He has to be like Yaakov, right? Yaakov, only reason why he was able to defeat Lavan was because he knew Torah, and he was able to deal wisely with him. Aval nashim daitan kalot. But women, you walked in just at the right time.
I'm doing Ram Yomi since March. Today we're anxious and basically Islam. You know, that like son is halacha, you know, women, the husband has to make sure that his wife never leaves the house long enough to cross the line.
Right. You know, he says a woman's not imprisoned. She gets to leave the house once or twice a month.
Don't let her go to base abo, they squish them, then she's like she's in prison.
Right.
And the husband can make a bet there that his wife never goes to visit his in-laws. What we can do is he can also say to his wife, I don't ever want my in-laws coming over.
Yeah, because she has to respect him more than her parents. Yeah, so it's complicated. Okay, hold on, guys. So the Marsha says because women are flighty minds, they'll be more likely maybe. I would argue that there's two elements here. The Marsha says, first of all, men are out in business. They need the protection that cleverness will give them, which is through the Torah. And also the fact is that men are better at taking that Torah and making it for use. So I'll focus on the first thing, which is that in the time of the Marsha, women weren't likely to get out of the house, I guess like the Rambam, you know, once or twice a month kind of thing. So I don't want to focus on the Nashim Daitan Kalot part, they have flighty minds, but rather if it's a situation or a sociological situation where women are like unlikely to go out of the house, there's no point of having that cleverness. It won't go to good use. It'll go for sexual impropriety or something like that. Okay. So far, this is what I'm trying to prove. Rabbi Eliezer believes, keep your questions for the end. Rabbi Eliezer believes that the problem teaching Torah to women, this is how the Gemara understands it also, is that they will learn a certain amount of cleverness and get around the mitzvah. That could mean that if this woman comes to him and says, when it comes to the Egel Azav, why were there three different deaths? Noting the fact that there's a Sota aspect to this, maybe she was trying to get around certain amount of, you know, the death penalty. She was trying to get around the punishments from God. She was trying to see where was the wiggle room that she wouldn't have to worry about. Okay? And so now the last piece of this puzzle is, why did he say, let the Torah be burnt and to be given to women? So this is what the Gemara in Shabbos says. Taner Rabbanan. Gemara in Shabbos. Habrachot v'akamin, this is interesting in general, it says that when you write amulets, which presumably have the name of God in them, or you write brachot, prayers, presumably, which by the way, the Rav uses to prove that
are
this...
allowed to write amulets?
No, the Rav uses this to prove that actually prayers have a din of Tor Shabbat Peh, but we won't get into that. He says, when you write these things and you're using God's name, apo pi sheyesh behem otiyot shel shem, even if they have God's name in them, notar beisha b'torah, and it has matters of Torah, ein matzilin otam ibnei adleka, you cannot save them from a fire. Meaning if there's a fire on Shabbos, you can't save them from a fire. You can't put out the fire. You can't save them, even though they have God's name in them. Ela nisrafim bimkomam heim as korotam. You have to let them burn. Mikan amru. Look at the bold part over here. Mikan amru. From here they said. Hold your question to the end, okay? Because I don't want to keep everybody. Mikan amru. From here they said. Kotvei brachot kesorfei Torah. Those who write brachot are like those who burn the Torah. Because you are allowing for the erasing of God's name. Here's what I'm going to say, right? This is a strong statement. You're writing down a bracha, so you're meaning a prayer that you want to be able to remember for later. It's as if you are burning the Torah. What does that mean? Okay? And you could look at this last source. It's a similar thing having to do with writing down Torah Shabbat Peh B'chlal is compared to burning Torah. Nowadays, it's different. You can look at the source over here, and you can look at the general conclusion about writing down Torah Shabbat Peh, but it was compared to Kisorfei Torah. So, two sources about the idea of Kisorfei Torah, that something is like burning the Torah, that writing down amulets and brachot, meaning prayers, if you write them down, it's like burning the Torah. That's what the Gemara in Shabbos calls it. Why? Because Rashi explains it as, when you write it down, it might be burnt. And apparently, fires are fairly common. I mean, if you're building with like wood and stuff, you know, it's very easy for stuff to be flammable if you don't have modern engineering. And so it was likely that you're going to have these things burnt, or even unlikely, even if it was like a small chance. We don't want to even give a chance where it's unnecessary to write down God's name because it might be burnt. We know that God is willing to do that when it comes to Shalom Bayis for Sota, but we're queasy about it. So it's Kisarfei Torah. And that Torah Shabbat Peh, writing down Torah Shabbat Peh is also compared to burning the Torah. The reason being is what? It doesn't say. It doesn't say why that's Kisarfei Torah. So I want to suggest like this. Instead of like Rashi, where it's like... Yeah, right? So instead of like what Rashi says, where it's like you're giving it a chance to be burnt, I want to say it's different. When you write down something, you're giving it over to be misunderstood. So when you write down the Torah Shabbat Peh, when you write it down, people could read it and misunderstand it. They might not have a Rebbe. You could read the Torah and completely go away with completely the wrong understanding of it. So what? How is it like burning Torah? It's like burning Torah because you're going to allow people to misunderstand it. It's like the Torah is being burnt, right? That's really bad. So what did Rabbi Eliezer say to this woman? Or really, he said it to his son, right? Horkanos. He said, I'd rather the Torah be burnt than to be given over to women. What he was saying is, I'd rather let the Torah be misunderstood by not explaining it to her. I'd rather it be misunderstood, because that's, right, writing down the Torah Shabbat Peh is like Kisorfei Torah, burning the Torah. I'd rather do that, make it misunderstood, than to be giving it over to this woman, right, that she was asking specifically about Sota stuff to get around, like, the laws and whatever, right? I'd rather the Torah be misunderstood by not explaining it to her, and she won't have the right idea, than to give her the right idea and let her abuse it. Not misunderstand it, but understand it almost too well, right? So maybe that actually explains why, you remember that other insult that he says to this woman? Women's knowledge or women's wisdom is only in the spindle, in the sewing needle. And he actually uses a pasuk from the Mishkan where all the women, wise-hearted women, got together and sewed things. So I want to explain it like this. Very interesting. If you read, just reading that in the Torah, right, that these wise-hearted women contributed their arts and their wisdom to the Mishkan, you would come away with this great praise of women. So I think what Rabbi Eliezer was saying is, you want me to allow for the Torah to be abused and misunderstood or intentionally misused and abused? Well, let me show you what that feels like. How about I read a pasuk in the Torah to make it sound like the only wisdom that women have is in the spindle, which is exactly the opposite of what it's trying to say. right? I'll show you what it's like to misuse the Torah. And that's really the message that she was getting. And maybe that actually explains the connection to the Luchot that Moshe broke. Right? He sees the people at the bottom of the mountain and they're worshiping this idol. And we've been, you know, there's like the tendentious connection of Sota to this story of the ego. So maybe that's exactly what Moshe was doing when he broke the Luchot. He said, I'd rather the Torah be burnt, kind of like broken, the Luchot, than to allow for these people to like read it and misunderstand it and misuse it. And you have different midrashim of how they like figured out that they were allowed to make this god. Why did they think that they were allowed to make a god? They just heard the Aseret HaDibrot, and they have all these different midrashim. So that's the idea, I think, that Rabbi Eliezer was afraid that this woman, or maybe women in that society, perhaps, or those noble women, the Matronas and whatever, are. I'd rather the Torah not be explained to those women, because I know that what could happen is the misuse and the abuse of that system, of the text of the Torah. So I'd make the argument that even if that in Rabbi Eliezer's time, he was worried that it was Kisorfei Torah. He was worried about the possibilities, the risky possibilities here, that it could turn to something inappropriate. It could turn into something dangerous. However, if there's a time where it's necessary, maybe Rabbi Eliezer would also make this drasha of Eit Lasot L'Hashem and allow women, for example, to learn Torah, just like we write down the Torah Shabbat Peh, and we write down our prayer books, you know, we write that we have the Sidurim today. So that's the argument I want to make for Rabbi Eliezer, that he was worried for the very specific dangers of learning Torah in that context, and that's what he means. Yisrafu Torah, ve'al yimsiru l'nashim. Shkoyach, guys.